going on that's really taking place. And you know, I mean, you know, that old adage said they woke up grumpy, and he said, "No, I'd let them sleep." You know, that kind of vibe where you wake up and you're just in that agitated mood where people are just out to get you. Where do you think that's coming from? What's going on? I mean, anybody else just experiencing that this week? You guys all got here, but those of you who had little kids know what it's like getting a fight in church parking lot before you get there, and you know, waking up and just not wanting to do things for the Lord. And it's like the spirit of exhaustion is what I've been sensing on people. I've just been sensing that the pressure is just really on. And it's just like people can't get a break. And that's where I really would like to put the perspective on two different things. I took a different direction last week, and probably we should take a different one this week just based on what's going on. Just to give you an understanding, I had 11 calls last night that kept me going. And then I had about 5 this morning. One of them was Stephen Marty Finn. Marty was in the hospital till about 4-something this morning with heart palpitations. And so they thought she might have been having a heart attack. And so they're out. And then Max just went on a 3-hour tour to Phoenix, Arizona. And I say it like that because Scott had another tour just recently where they were moving Nate and Aaron to Arizona. And his trailer, the axle busted and the tire kind of collapsed in. And there's a brand new trailer that happened. That's good that it happened. So there's all these like little annoying things that go on. We've had people that have called with arguments. And I'm just curious, you know, as I raised a hand, people kind of did that. Can you not tell the difference between, you know, you keep wondering when you're in that position about what did you do that was wrong? You know, you want to know how you got on the bad side of God. And, you know, maybe your life's going okay right now, and that's good. But I'm sure all of you can identify what it's like to just feel like you got this persecution thing going on. And it's just more than what people can handle. And I always take great comfort in remembering the passage of Scripture where Jesus says that a bruised reed he doesn't break and a smoldering wick he won't extinguish. So I don't think that God's interested in trying to break us into that kind of emulsified kind of just nothingness. I think he's actually trying to help us. I think he's actually trying to pull for us. A big part of the problem is not necessarily knowing you know, how to tell when God's trying to correct you for something. You know, you did something wrong. And when it's just the enemy that's coming in trying to gravitate us. Has anybody ever read the book by Francis Frangipane called The Three Battlegrounds as opposed to all the other ones? How many have read that? Do you remember the principle? Well, I got this major colic going on. That's pretty weird. You ever remember that part in the book where he talks about what the three battlegrounds are? What are the three battlefields? Who can share that has read the book? Barbara? And so they call the three arenas where the enemy fights us in the mind, the will, and the emotions. And Francis has a very unique vision of where that happens in the mind, will, and emotions, because he doesn't just see it as simply warfare. And you know, if you somehow can get out of those three things, the warfare can stop. He actually talks about this battle that takes place in between God's will, your will, and the enemy's will, all colliding in that one moment of time. And how many have experienced that? Is it any wonder that you feel torn apart? For those of you that are feeling like you don't know which way to run, I'm recalling that joke of the insurance man who he fills out, you know, he reads the forms that have been filled out. And one of the testimonies in there was that I saw the old man in the intersection and he didn't know which way to go, so I ran over him. You know, that's the deer in the headlight kind of composition that people go through in life. And I think that I would be a poor steward in the moment if I didn't just speak to that, that issue, that there really is that tension and the enemy gets us into a place of confusion. Now, that's really what's going on there. Francis identifies the spirit of confusion as powerfully dangerous as the spirit of fear. And fear can be expressed in anger. Fear can be expressed in a lot of different ways. Confusion can also be demonstrated in a lot of different ways. People that get into that place of confusion, it's not just the reluctance to go forward. They are completely incapable of knowing which way to go. And every detail is confusing them. I have been doing counseling a number of years, and I wouldn't necessarily say that I'm a wise person, but I've seen so many people spiritually stuck, especially over the last 10 years, that I would kind of label it at epidemic proportions, where people are just paralyzed by confusion. So let's talk just for a second about the nature of confusion. Again, this wasn't my planned message for today, so you'll have to forgive that, but I do think it's relevant for the time. What does confusion bring to people? We talked about the three battlefields, the mind, the will, and the emotion. Those three arenas that take place, the enemy's access there. I'm going to talk for a minute about strongholds just for a second because I think that people have one vision of strongholds and we haven't got a lot of teaching about the other one. But what happens when we get confused? Vision gets limited, right? We can't see clearly for what's going on. Anybody ever drove in a very dark fog bank where you can't see more than like a few feet in front of you? I am a little bit of a risk taker. In the late 70s, I found out, I found out it's a really bad thing to do when you're on Canaan Road to do that, to drive by the painted lines. That's really bad. But you get really confused. Things aren't clear as to what's going on, and you're not really sure what's happening. And so your way is, even the way out seems bleak. It seems like there really is no way to move. What about the clouding of confusion? Have you ever not heard right when you're in that place of confusion where somebody says something to you and you just take it the wrong way? Even if that person didn't mean it that way, you're hearing it that way. I had a recent experience of that where I swore I heard this person say exactly this way. I was surprised when I said, no, that's not what you said. And the person actually had taped it and played it back, and he had said something completely different. But I had heard it this way. How many have had that happen to you? You ever heard of the spirit of delusion that comes on people where, well, that's the way I remember it, so I'm going to kind of settle on that. Well, I think that there are attributes about confusion that really a degree of dementia comes in to where you can't process information. There are people here who have been through extreme financial trouble. It'll be easier for you to identify that. But I have seen people that have had so much calamity that they can't even see clearly what's going on. They don't know what to do first. Does that make sense? You know, I've seen that to almost epidemic proportions. And the other thing that I think comes with confusion is the anxiety that comes with confusion. And all of us would biblically say, well, you know, I know anxiety is not from God. So I think all of us would identify with that. Anxiety is not of the Lord. My tension is not really of God. But none of us really know how to stop the anxiety from happening. Sleepless nights where you're tossing and turning and you don't seem to be able to shake it. And you try, well, maybe I just need a funny movie or something. And then you watch that and still not any deliverance. I've had opportunities where I've gone to sleep and I have dreams that I call the what was that all about dreams, you know, where you wake up and like last night I had this dream where I was being hit by pigs. Just like these pigs were just plummeting me. I'm walking down the road and they weren't like, you know, big fat pigs. They were little cute little pink pigs, but I couldn't figure out, you know, and somebody's trying to have a conversation and it's like, what is that a pig? And, it wasn't bacon either, Josh, so that was a real problem, but just off the wall trippy dreams that just don't make any sense. And then you're trying to, and then the Christians. So you remember that joke I told you about the YWAM guy where there's the Catholic and the Baptist and the New Ager who go to hell and just all, there's a YWAMer down there too. And so the Baptist guy, the devil confronts him and says, why are you here? And the Baptist says, well, I'm just, you know, I just messed up and I'm here. He walks up to the Catholic guy and the Catholic guy says, hey, don't worry about it. Someone's praying me out of here right now. He walks up to the New Age guy and the New Age guy goes, I'm not here and hell's not hot. And then the YWAMer's in the corner and he's got his Bible and his notebook in his hand and he's like, Lord, what are you trying to teach me through this? But a Christian is so conflicted sometimes that we'll wake up from a dream like that and we're so charismatic that we're actually looking for an interpretation. You know, we're like, pigs, what could pigs mean? Okay, it means this, defilement. Okay, got it, Lord. So we spend another hour just trying to pray through that. It's getting crazy. You ever had a situation where you've tried to seek counsel when you're going through that area of confusion and you try to go to a wise person that's always giving you good advice and then they completely misinterpret what it was that you just said and you know, they all of a sudden make it your problem. You know, you're looking for a little consolation, a little comfort, you know, just a little empathy. And they're like, well, if you learn to pay your traffic tickets, you know, or, well, that's just the way you are. You're always so difficult. And you're like, why don't you just shut up? You know, it's just the tension that comes in. So we end up going where? We end up getting worn out. by all the ordeal of it all, the drama of the whole thing. We get literally physically exhausted where we can't move right or left. And I think that people today are just stirred up with just the sensation of just being unhappy and unsatisfied. And it wouldn't make any difference, really. You know, if you gave them $1 million, they'd be complaining that it's on dirty money. And it's really not to highlight the nature of the person as much as to say that when we're going through confusion, it's a hard time. We have to recognize what's really going on. It's kind of warfare. Now, Frangipane does something really interesting in that book. He goes one step further, if my memory calls me, if it's correct in what I'm thinking. But he starts redefining strongholds. Now, because I'm a typical charismatic, I've always been taught that strongholds are these places that the enemy digs and hides, and that's where entrenchments, we call those, you know, where there's things in our life that are unexposed and they trip us up. But Francis goes one step further, and he defines strongholds as places that we go when we're afraid, that we've dug these places to keep ourselves safe. Now, I would point out that when people are going through a hard time, that some people get really silent, and they don't say anything at all. And you know something's wrong, and you're trying to figure out how to relate to that person, and it's like trying to hug a porcupine. They just, you don't know what's going on or why, what's happening. And, you know, they're going through a difficult time, and they become very unloving at that point in their experience. Become very difficult to deal with. And then there are other people that when they hide from those emotions is they start doing things that you act out on. Now, again, I've had about a number of years to think about this guy's book, and I've seen this happen. Where you ever seen a good person that's just kind of walking really good with the Lord, and then they do something completely crazy, like completely out of context? I have a friend that he went to jail because he thought it was a good idea to sell drugs to earn mission money. Now, that is okay. But, you know, I think he was hiding from the responsibility. You know, Steve, you're about ready to go on a mission trip. You feel the pressure coming. And there's everything in your head, every imagination that tells you to quit. You know, we talked about that, right? I ain't going, and you can't make me go. And Ariana just called with the same thing. She's back east, and she kind of went there, and she said, "This is not God's will for my life. I made a horrible mistake, and I'm coming home." Now, she didn't say that verbatim, but I heard it in her words. You know, you come and lead these people, I'm done. And that indicates to Moses, you know. Half the time, God was like, "Move out of the way, Moses, I'm going to kill him." And Moses is like, "No, no." And the other half is like, "What are you taking so long? I wanted him wiped out yesterday." You know, there's that whole situation. So we're feeling the pressure of I quitness that's coming out. And it really is a stronghold. It's a place of hiding. And we have not gotten very good at recognizing when when the Spirit of God is trying to do something in our life, we feel very perplexed about what's going on. And so I had this idea that I had written down that I was going to preach on, and actually it kind of fits here. You know, the Bible talks about the need of endurance, that we should stay the course, that there's great favor in the Spirit for people that just hang in there, great power in showing up. You've heard me say this when I said the message last week, that I'm just too stupid to quit. And that is every indication and of every situation that would make me rational and reasonable to stop. There isn't anybody that I know of that would hear my story and say, "Nope, that was completely out of line." Everyone that I know of would hear my story and say, "Wow, I definitely understand." But you can't quit on God, and God's not quitting on you. I talked about that. But I remembered that this phrase that I had a number of years ago, that I think that if I do have a strength, if I do have a character strength, which, by the way, is not many, but if I do have a strength, it's the fact that that too stupid to quitness, that tenacity, that keep on keeping onness of the Spirit that causes us to go one more step to deal with one more day. You know, Ted and Pam, I'm sure with your situation with Troy, that there's that situation like the whens, you know, the promises of God coming. It's like, "Well, can you come by Tuesday? Because this has just gone on a long time." And I would encourage you to remember Daniel chapter 10, where Daniel is dealing with a situation. There's a struggle, and his answer is, "What do you do when it takes, you know, longer than you anticipate for it to happen?" Well, you keep on walking. That's what you do, because that's what the people of God do. We don't have any other choice. Staying here is not an option, so we have to continue on persevering in the Spirit. So the stronghold, although it seems like it's natural to want to kind of cave in, to hibernate, and to just pull down, you know, Jennifer sent me an email that said that don't break her fantasy because she's working on a good case of denial right now, that this is kind of what she wants. You know, she's in that place where you want that fantasy to be perpetuated a little bit, and so you pull down the rose-colored stained glass windows and you just kind of live life in your own bubble, and you know, you just watch Christian television and you don't really engage the world because it seems safer, doesn't it? You just want to hide away from these things. Now, how many of you have hidden from God before in your life? How many of you actually can feel that temptation, especially just God speaking, and you're like, thank you very much. I recently went to a conference and they were like, oh, do you want this person to pray for you? And I'm like, man, listen, I'm still working on the words the guy gave me in 1982. So when I catch up, I'll stand in line. We hide from God, don't we? And in the book of Genesis, you see that confrontation when Adam comes, you know, the one that could have healed him, the one that could have restored him. But it's an indication of the brokenness of the relationship, the fallenness. How far had Adam fallen? No, he no longer trusted God with being good to him. He thought God would be angry with him and punish him. And it really was more than he could handle. And oh, I wonder what would have happened if Adam had just turned and just kind of sought restitution, not making excuses for what's going on, and just pressed into what the Lord had for him. You know, I don't know and I can't presume, but I will tell you that you know, we're not going to have the benefit of knowing. So maybe the Christian personality needs to learn tenacity. So I'm going to give you a phrase, since I'm kind of like focusing on my little eloquisms. You might write this down. That one of my phrases in life that I kind of put these little magnets up every once in a while and to remind me of things. This chicken run was called Veni, Vidi, Velcro. I came, I saw, I stuck around. And some of us need to have that kind of stick-to-itness about what's going on with God's plan in our life as He's kind of working out. Right now, why don't you just turn to Hosea chapter 11. Hosea chapter 11. Yeah, probably you guys don't even know where that is, do you? Are you turning there? Did you hear about the veterinarian who had very slow business? I hope Debbie would be here today because she's a veterinarian. So on the side, he opened up a taxidermy service to try to make ends. Seems like a conflict. Because he figured with the two vocations, he might be able to, you know, better serve the students and double his money, you know. So on his door, he puts the slogan, which I thought was hysterical. It kind of just says that veterinary service or taxidermy service, either way, you get your dog back. So, Hosea chapter 11. Now, this is a prophetic passage that's at a time of desolation for the Israelites. They have been suffering at this point in time, it could have been, you know, close to a few hundred years he's struggling with what's going on. They are dry, and this is a post-exilic prophet, so the time is coming to an end about what they're struggling with. But how do I frame this? They've been going through this testing time for a long, long time at this point in time, a little worn out. And so it's easy when people are going through a hard time to envision or imagine that God is against them and that God doesn't like them or something. And so there's this tendency of just getting things mixed up, and we lose perspective about what that is. Let me ask you a question. Is love a suggestion? And most of us would say no, love is a commandment. But what does it mean to love? What does it mean to love others as you would love themselves or to love God above all else? What does love really mean? I mean, is love just a saying? How many here would identify that maybe we don't really know what it is to love God, to trust God, to be in relationship with God? I mean, we want to. I'm just not sure it's all there yet. Well, I think part of the problem is that we have this vision that maybe God is acting towards us in a way that we're misunderstanding, and so we get afraid and we draw back. We hide, just like Adam kind of hid in that situation. So Hosea 11, verse 3 is a very interesting verse because it says that I'm going to read it. It says, I taught Ephraim also to go, taking them by their arms, and they knew not that I had healed them. That's an interesting passage. I drew them with the cords of a man and with the hands of love. And I was to them so that I could take off the yoke of their on their jaws, the pressure that they were feeling. Now this passage is very interesting because in verse 3, one of the things it says there is that he was taking them by their arms, but and they knew not that I healed them. Why would they not know that God had healed them? Why would they not know that God was in relationship with them except for that they had a twisted conception about what God was actually doing? So there is a goodness of God that's towards you right now. And there's a history that God has with you about the great things that He has done for you. There is evidence in your life of God's blessing in your life. Now, who here can attest to that blessing that God has been in your life? How many things have God delivered you from? How many trials has God seen you through? How many victories have you seen come? And the indictment really isn't so much that we're knucklehead people and we don't get the picture. I think that it's definitely not like the Janet Jackson song, "What Have You Done For Me Lately," either. I think it's a genuine sense of confusion that when something's wrong in the relationship, we're desperate for that to be right again, and we have a fear that keeps us from trusting and accessing God. We have a hesitancy. We're busy doing what we're doing, and we're feeling a little bit resistant about what God is doing. But I think that there is a place we can get to where we could have this ungrateful attitude towards God and about all the good things that He's done. It just twists just a little bit, and it takes a genuine trust, and it kind of turns it into something other, something foreign, something that we're not really proud of. But it really is a position of ungratefulness to God. Now, I know that nobody here wants to be ungrateful to God. Nobody wants to be upset at God for anything. And I'm struggling on my words. You guys know where my heart is today. I'm trying to say something difficult, and I hope that the message is becoming clearly. Don't let disappointment dictate your actions. Don't let your frustration about what's happening right now cloud your thinking and cloud your judgment, cloud your actions. God definitely is trying to love you, and you are resisting that. I can only do this by calling attention to everyone who has ever broken up with a girl or a guy here. I think it's mainly a guy thing, though. Have you ever had your date, like, withdraw from you for some reason, like you're trying to put your arms around them to comfort them, and they're resisting you? Or how many have had a child where you're trying to say something to that child by way of correction, and you're trying to, like, comfort them, and they're like, "No, don't touch me, don't hug me." Anybody ever had that experience happen, right? Well, we can be like that towards the Lord sometime, who's trying to reach us, and we can become difficult, and like we can become resistant to what God wants to do. He's trying to love us, but we're not doing that. We can be closed to what God has. So I think that what we think is that God's threatening us with wrath. I think we think that we're going to get in more trouble. My dog always thinks that he's going to get in more trouble. And then he ends up in more trouble because he won't come, you know. But you're over there, come here, and they're like, "I ain't going near you with a 10-foot pole." And you're like, "No, come here." And then they're like, "No, I ain't coming to you." And they think they're getting in trouble. And so the more you chase, then it becomes even worse by the time it's done. But there's this resistance to move towards that. In Hosea 11, verse 8 and 9, do you see, if you could turn just a little bit, what is it that the people of God are calling for the Lord to do? This is a very powerful phrase, but do you see that the connection between in wrath remembering mercy? Do you see that? Everybody see that in 8 and 9 if you got it open? In wrath remember mercy. Why is that so important a concept? It's because although we might be fully merit worthy of God's consternation, there's also this wave of mercy that God wants to bring us back into right relationship with. But all we can do is see the wrath. All we can do is we feel like that's going to happen to us. And I think that there's a blindness to them. Hosea 1, or 11:1, He shows them kindness when they're young. God shows them kindness when they're young. Isn't it good to know that you don't have to have your act together with God all the time? Isn't it good that God knows that that He gives you some credit for the fact that maybe you're inexperienced in all of this and you may not know how to handle what's going on? Isn't it good to know that God gives you a break and that He's not trying to hold you into some unrealistic expectation? He has mercy for us when we're weak. The Bible says that in our weakness, God's strength is made perfect. And we have to remember that when we're going through a difficult time. We may not feel like we got it all together, and we might feel fairly weak, but this is not something that the powers of heaven are trying to grind us into dust. If you go down just a little further, God does expect us to grow up. I believe that. It might be connected there, but He's delivering us out of bondage. Now, some people think of bondage as simply demonization, and I don't think that it's totally a good picture. Remember, I was making a reference to Francis Frangipane's book. I think that being delivered from bondage has to do with our incapacitation, are the things that we may not even have the ability to do. Sometimes guys don't know exactly how to cry. I think it's funny that when you see a guy finally start to cry, that when they go to, is it left brain land or right brain land? I don't even know that. But do you notice that when they go there, ladies, that they become fairly unreasonable to live with, because then they're just crying over everything, the American flag, pie, you know, they're just crying all the time. You really don't know how to handle what's going on, because you're like, okay, listen, I wanted you to be emotional and everything, but this is just getting way out of hand, okay? You know, it's a lot there. Do you know how people have an incapacitation to express emotion, right? What things are in your life are do you feel like you're incapable of expressing? Can you identify that? What's in your life? I'm mainly speaking to people that are like wanting to run when confronted with something, wanting to hide. I talked a little bit about that. Talked about the nature of distrusting. Talked a little bit about that. Now I'm talking about the inability that you have to experience some emotion. Now Sue and I are an amazing contrast that, you know, she can feel one set of emotions and I feel another set of emotions, and they don't always jive in how we're trying to communicate, you know. So I'm one of those individuals that grew up and, you know, I've said this about a billion times, but you know, when I'm mad, I'm mad. When I'm sad, I'm mad. When I'm happy, I'm mad. You know, you ever had that experience, you know? So she'll say something like, why aren't you happy? And I'm like, I am happy. I'm happy. I'm really happy. I'm happy. I think that some people just have a shunted ability of expressing emotion, and I'm not sure why that is. But I think that's what one of these things is talking about. That's a bondage. It really is a bondage in not being able to know what to say and when to say it. How many people here know people that have a hard time saying they're sorry? Yeah, where you want to write it down and say the word sorry. Say, I apologize. Can't get it out. There's lots of areas of life that we may not have the ability to express or to do. And I don't think that God's holding us accountable for that. I think that we have to recognize sonship. What does sonship mean? What do you think Francis meant when I don't even know why that book's coming to my mind right now, but what did he mean when he talked about the power of sonship? What does it mean to be God's child? Now, if honest and I did a good survey, how many here would say that you have a problem in seeing yourself as God's child in that sometimes? It's just very difficult for you to really feel that affirmation. I know a lot of people do. How many people here feel wrong more than they feel right? Come on, people can be honest. Yeah. Now, what is that that's happening there? Is that the truth? No, it's not the truth, but that's what we feel about. Well, God is trying to set things back in right order, and so I'd kind of point to the idea in there that, especially in Hosea 11:4, since that's the passage that I have open in my Bible, Hosea 11:4, can somebody read that out loud? What? Because I think it's a powerful phrase. How is it that God is dealing with you? Hosea 11:4. Can somebody read that in any kind of version outside of like Greek, Spanish, Portuguese, you know? Huh? That's good. Anybody else have like an NIV version? What's the thought there? I want to kind of wrestle with the thought there. Yeah. So, cords of kindness, bands of love. God's work is to what? Does it say whipping post? Does it say rod of wrath? Does it say... No, I don't think that's the picture. I think the picture in Hosea is that God's process of dealing with your shortcomings is to bind you up, but not in the kind of bondage that we're talking about. We're talking about being bound with cords of love, being bound to the will of the Father, being bound to the kindness of God, being brought into right relationship with Him. God's process of dealing with your problems is kindness. He's merciful as He's drawing you in there. Now, those of you that are parents know what it's like to rebuke and correct your children out of anger. And there's two kinds of people here. There are people that know that experience, or there's liars. But you all know what it's like to discipline in anger. And you know what it's like to get corrected by the Spirit in that and go, yeah, I might have felt better for the moment, but now I feel kind of like, yeah, whatever. So you know what I'm talking about. All you know what it's like, you know. All you know, the go out and play or go to your room. And it has nothing to do, no matter what crisis that kid is going through, there's no empathy in you at that moment. It's like, whatever, just don't cry. If you are going to cry, go cry over there because I don't want to hear it right now. So all of us know what it's like, but God is not like that in nature. The good parent of God, the fathering of God, always has one destination for correction. What is that? Why is God correcting you? You don't know. That's great. How many want to know the answer to that question right now? What is He trying to do? God is trying to correct you because He loves you. He wants that relationship to be restored. Now, those of you that are intuitive parents would also recognize that when you're trying to correct your children, they don't always see what you're doing to them as good. I remember when I was a kid, my stepdad used to say, you know, this is going to hurt me a lot more than it's going to hurt you. And I'm like, yeah, sure. Why don't you try switching places with me then, you know? I think that that's what kids do. There's a natural distrust of you at that point in time. And there's a natural distrust of God when He's trying to teach you something. You're just automatically thinking that this is not going to work. But I think there should be great confidence to recognize that God is trying to work something good in our spirit. That these bands of love, they're trying to signify that we're getting stronger than we were before. So that we won't be a reed that's blown about by the wind. I had this seedling that I was trying to grow this one time, and every time I came back, I don't know what had happened, but it always was blown out of the hole and knocked over. And I am not a green thumb person. If you give me a plant, I'll kill it. Might be my gifting. I don't know. But I know that somebody gave me the wise idea, well, why don't you just stake the tree up and tie it, and it'll grow strong, because it needs to, well, you know, I don't know whether that's always the best solution when it comes to kids. I'm not giving you scriptural permission to go home and tie up your children. But, you know, let the Spirit speak to you. If it works, whatever. I think that there is a tendency, though, of feeling like anything that's happening that's corrective is just more than we can handle, and it's restricting us and we don't want it. But maybe those cords of love are being wrapped around us and we're feeling constricted so that we could grow right. We could grow straight, you know, so we can have this right thing that's going on in our life. It's something that I feel like the Lord wants for all of us, and probably to pay attention to that. And so because of all the pressure that's going on today, I'd like to just kind of close with that one idea about taking the yoke of their jaws, taking the pressure off. I mean, man, today, guys, I was just overwhelmed by what's going on. The testimonies that are coming are just really, you know, they're hard. What's happening to some people, and it probably is more than what people can handle. And I just want to just remind you of that today, that I want to see it come off your face a little bit. I want to see the pressure relieved a little bit. I want you to be restored in your perspective about what is really going on, that I can pray for you during that time. And just kind of recognize that maybe what's really going on is we're losing sight of this. Sometimes, oh man, I don't know how to say this without stepping on toes. But, sometimes we make everything about us. And, you know, it's everything is happening to us. And I am guilty of that way too many times to where I'm not the epitome of empathy, though. If you ask me to go visit you in a hospital, I might be prone to say something like, well, you think you got problems? Move over and let me tell you mine. But, you know, we lose perspective on things, don't we? About what's really going on sometimes. We're blinded to the needs that are around us and what's really going on. And, if I had any message today, you know, I was desperately trying to reach for the Lord with the amount of calls that came in today. And I was like, man, God, what do you want to say? I just really want to just encourage you with that sometimes there's just a little bit more going on than meets the eye. And maybe God is with us more than we recognize. And maybe we just need to just get a new perspective about what the Lord wants to do. And I've seen people this week, they were going to quit their jobs and, you know, leave their spouses and not go on mission trips. And the pressure's on. And I know that the pressure's on. And I'm not saying to just live in a good sense of denial. I'm saying that the Lord is trying to be with you in that. And the only passage that came to my mind was this one in Hosea as I altered my direction for this morning. But it was intended to build you up, to lift you up. That, you know, this is not... hey, listen, when I get by, it's not like I don't have any pressures. You know, I have pressures. I wasn't planning on doing a lot of things that I did this morning, but I just did them because that's my spiritual responsibility, and that's just what you do. You just keep moving, and you don't judge others that are around you. You try to help them when they're going through a hard time. Because people do. People will. People go through hard times, and that's just kind of the way it is. And you have to be available to me. That's why we're a family. That's why we're a body. So when one person is weak, the other person can step up to the plate, and it can happen like a nice ebb and flow. Listen, at this church, you don't have to worry about putting on your smile all the time. That just, you know, get over that, because half of you don't even know how to smile, so that's just okay. But you don't always have to wear picture-perfect clothes. You don't always have to worry that you're in the right place. You know, the only reason, if you call and say, I can't make it because, you know, me and Joe are fighting, and, the only thing I want to know, is it a good fight? You know, is this something we need to videotape and play at pay-per-view? You know, I'm just into it. You know, if you're not in a good place to do whatever, then don't worry about it. It's not like we can't live without donuts or, you know. I actually heard somebody to talk about making this a bad day. It's a friend of mine's church, and he had like just a string of bad things. And he's a volunteer, and the pastor fired him because he couldn't keep his car like in maintained order. And he just had a fear that he was going to have a flat tire like the second time. So he fired him. Like, you can fire volunteers? That's great. Didn't know you could do that. But we kind of lose the purpose in what we're really talking about, don't we? Is that right? You know, sometimes people just need to have just a kind word in season. Isn't that part of our scriptural responsibility, to give a good word in season at the right time when people need it? Well, the only way that's going to happen is if we give each other a break, a breather. And I just try to help people not to say more and overload. You know, never let your backside overload your mouth. You know, just kind of... just get you through whatever it is you're going through. I still care about you. I still love you. I still believe in you. You're no different to me than you were before. No, and this isn't just targeted to one person. You know, Steve, I know you wanted to quit. I didn't expect you to not want to quit. I'm being transparent. You may not like that, but oh well. But, you know, Steve called me honestly one day and said, you know, I'm not going. Then he called, okay, I'm going. Okay, I'm not going. Going. I'm like... So, you know, we got some rope here. We're going to bind you with the cords of love. Stick you on that airplane. It might look a little weird. But now, whatever you decide to do, it's okay. Do you realize that? It's not a big failure. I'm sure that George and Michelle, you have a kid that understands that too. I mean, I'm not going to bridle people with unrealistic expectations. You know, you haven't disappointed me. You know, I think we just got to kind of hang in there together about what God is trying to do. You know, this is brokenness, this is fallenness. Ain't no, the churches that kind of look like they have it together, I'd be just a tad bit suspicious about, to be honest with you. Be a tad bit suspicious about it. I'm going to give you a very funny thing to end with, and I'm going to just show this video. You know, the New Testament encourages us to be peaceable with all men. Be peaceable with all men. And that's really not the problem. The problem is that Paul later says in the very next verse, that you're supposed to be sober-minded, to not be drunk with wine, but be filled with the Spirit. So the trouble really here with the Apostle Paul is that he wants us to get along, and he wants us to do it sober. Now that's a troubling proposition.